This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 503, brought to you by Bald Eagle Comics and iFanboy listeners just like you.
I can't believe it. The way you look sometimes, like a trampled flag on a city street. Oh, yeah. And I don't want it. The things you're offering me.
Hello, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 503. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
You sound silky smooth, Josh.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. And Ron Richards.
Hello.
Hello.
Smooth like a baby seal.
That's what I want to both look, feel, and sound like. We are there. We are iFanboy. We like comics. I'm out of practice, clearly. Every week we read our stack of comics, and then one of us takes a week off because they got to travel for work, and then you talk shit about them when they're gone, and then when they're walking there.
Did we talk shit about you?
A little at the beginning.
But, other than not being on the show, that's just standard.
I know. It's the well, you know, we're committed, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Do you expect any different?
No, I do.
It's been like 9+ years of this.
You said I was on the run for a murder rap once when I was gone. I mean.
It wasn't me. I don't know. Maybe I'm feeling vulnerable lately.
Guys.
Anyway, each one of us reads a bunch of comics, and then one of us gets the job of picking their favorite book of the week. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books. We will deal with some other things, some stuff. Maybe read some mail. It should be fun. I'm not promising.
We'll get our personal issues out.
Yeah, yeah. So your spoiler warning is that this is a review show, so it makes sense that we will talk about the things that happen in those books. If you have not read them, sort it out, brother. Ron, you had the pick this week.
I did have the pick of the week, and this week showed the much-anticipated release of Tokyo Ghost number 1 from Rick Remender and Sean Murphy. And first off, that's quite the team, don't you think?
Yes. It's surprising that they have not worked together.
It's funny because like talk about a creative team for the iFanboy wheelhouse.
Yeah, I was like, well, this all makes sense.
Right, yeah. Like, is there a writer that we've embraced more so than the Rick Remender, Jason Aaron? Like, there's the group of iFanboy approved writers, and I feel like there's a certain group of iFanboy enjoyed artists, and it's nice to see them come together and give us this I want to say it's not. I don't, derivative isn't the right word, but familiar, but at the same time, unique take on a type of story.
A lot of Remender's future stories that take place in the future. This takes place in
2089.
Yeah. Are of the similar milieu. He has some very specific fears about the future.
Yes,
that he works his way through in these comics.
And it's funny because I feel like this has a lot in common with Prez, which we'll talk later on. Although Prez is shorter in the future than the, you know, this is further out. But a similar kind of you know, similar kind of a weariness about the future and the technology that comes from it and all that sort of thing. But yeah, no, in the back of the book, Rick Remender, well, so I should say Tokyo Ghost number one was hotly anticipated and delivered, and it was my pick of the week. It was the book that I had the most fun reading. And as Rick mentions in his little write up, in his welcome write up at the back of the book, you know, he said, you know, this is our obvious love letter to Road Warrior, Judge Dredd, and 13 Assassins, which I feel like Road Warrior and Judge Dredd are way more obvious, but 13 Assassins, we're just gonna have to wait and see about that one.
I definitely in my head went, really?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And that's what made me interested in it. So like, you know, so the thing is that the Judge Dredd comparison is obvious. I mean, this almost feels like Rick doing his take on a Judge Dredd like approach, you know, like, you know,
what's the book? I can't think of the book. What's the
2000 AD?
There you go. So this is like you could put this in 2000 AD and everyone would be like, "Oh, right."
Yeah, exactly. Although instead of Mega City 1, we're still in Los Angeles and all that sort of stuff. And the motorcycles look kind of different. But yeah.
It's like
the
Batcycle.
Yeah, it does.
Batpod,
it really
actually
does.
Look a lot like the Batpod.
But yeah, so what we're introduced is we're introduced to these two characters, a guy and a girl, and I'm awful at names, and I'm
Led
to the Led is the big guy, and Debbie Decay. Is the girl, and Debbie Decay is unique in that she rejects technology. She's somewhat anti-technology, whereas Led Dent is her big bruiser guy, and he is as plugged in as can be.
She's the only one in Los Angeles not plugged in with these implants that makes basically turn the entire society into technology zombies. They're constantly looking at screens in front of them that are holographic. Her partner Led, her partner and slash lover or love of her life, has constantly got like 8 or 9 screens, pornography, reality TV, Twitter, all these different screens going all of the time. So he's constantly connected to things, looking through them at the world. And it's a very dark look at Rick has a lot of feelings about technology.
Really
Rick
does.
Rick has a lot of feelings.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, this is just another tour de force from Sean Murphy. If you look at the layer of detail and stuff that's going on, in the opening scene, or in the early part of the book, there's a death race. There's a, you know, kind of a cars racing each other. And like, they look like, do you remember a lot of them look like the Hot Wheels of our youth?
Yes. Yeah,
right.
They do.
Yeah, like that one
yellow one.
The yellow one. Yeah, yeah, with the engine popping out of it. And I mean, Sean Murphy just like does not fall short on the details, does not fall short on things going on in the background and like little things. Like every page is just a marvel to look at. And I just kind of drool over it. And you know, and the combination of Rick building this, you know, kind of technology laden world and with Sean Murphy's detail just sucked me completely in. And, you know, and
you're going to say dry.
No. And it quickly made me realize that, yes, there's a big motorcycle and yes, it's kind of Judge Dreddy, but this is something completely unique and something completely different and just totally completely captured me. And the villain in this, I thought was great. This top hatted millennial obsessed wannabe character where everything is a video game, and his arm, he's got a power glove with an NES controller and an Atari controller. And, you know, like it plays on some of the worst parts of our modern society going back to the 80s to now, you know, a combination of retro nostalgia and things like that. And to see the inevitable, or not inevitable, but possibly inevitable future that we could end up in. And to see our protagonist, you know, reject it and fighting for a way to get out, and finally gets there and is, you know, and Debbie is able to say to Led, you know, like, come with me. You know, like we can be free. We can go to Tokyo where there's no technology and it'll be fine. And he just says, my shows are on.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
The shows are on.
Yeah, exactly.
I just imagine both of you were looking at that scene and going, well, yeah, the shows were on.
Yeah, the shows are on.
Two things I thought about as reading this. One, you always know you're looking at a Sean Murphy comic.
Yeah.
He is a style that is unlike anything else
there. And it's weird to go from Chrononauts just ending, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then to go to this, because it looks so much like Sean Murphy. I was like, oh, this is a whole different thing.
Yep.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So the other thing is, is that I think Remender is very much carrying the legacy of Warren Ellis, who
yes.
is not dead, but still carrying his legacy.
Presumably.
Warren Ellis' books have a very similar tone. At least they did 15 years ago when I started reading them. In that the world that these characters are in is very pessimistic, but there's always a very optimistic central character.
Right. Well, I was gonna say this actually. I felt as if, you know, Rick comparing it to Road Warrior and Judge Dredd and 13 Assassins. I thought, you know, when immediately after reading it, I was like, oh, this is a lot. This is very Transmet-esque.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and not that it has a lot, it doesn't owe a lot to Transmet, but it's definitely in the same arena.
It's tonal. It's very tonal. Like, we're screwed, the world's going to hell, but there's hope in this character that we can pull out of it.
This felt a lot like a Joe Casey book to me too.
Interesting.
In that same sort of thing, like a lot of stuff going on, it's very referential of things. It exists within a culture, I guess, which is something that he does. It didn't feel a lot like a Rick Remender book, except there are bits of it that just exactly sounded like him.
Interesting. I felt it was very much him. I thought it was like weird inside his head.
Well, usually there's a really sad person in the middle talking about how they failed themselves and everybody. There is.
Well,
I'm not making that one up.
He just doesn't talk that much. Yeah.
Right. Or,
yeah,
and so in this one, there's specifically one dialogue box that I was like, well, that's Rick. Yes. Yeah. She's in the casino and she's like body pirating, clone incest, snuff prostitutes, Hong Kong suicides, slots, clown torture.
Yeah.
Clown torture?
There was a couple of Rickisms that as you know Rick.
Yeah, I mean, like, that was him, which is there a state sketch where the monkey torture?
There might be.
And I think that clown torture flagged monkey torture in my head, and I read it just like that, and it's very funny.
Yeah.
Clown torture. Anyway,
but there's some very trenchant observations about how technology is being used and taking over people. I mean, the idea that Led would rather watch the pornography than have sex with his girlfriend.
Yeah,
that's not unusual. I don't think anymore.
Yeah, that's a very damning thing that's happening, and there's a lot going on here that's very, you're just like, ugh. I don't like any of this.
I can only imagine the glee that that Rick wrote this villain with, you know, the millennial obsessed villain who, you know, talks about, you know he's going on a murder spree and he goes, now for an equally impressive exit with hella body count. And this is YOLO bitches, and like it's like, oh man, it's like I'm cringing as I'm reading it, but I totally understand. Like it gets the point across.
So. But then again, he talks about in the essay the tone will change a lot. If you look at the preview pages, you've almost got a samurai-esque story going on when they get to Tokyo, which is in the story the only place left on the planet with no technology.
Yeah.
So you've got a completely different kind of pages going on. So it'll be very interesting to see how this book progresses.
So you remember, Sorry, Josh. You remember a long time ago when we were playing The Sims?
Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago.
And the reason that I had to stop, and I know that Connor's the same, I don't know where he was, it was stressful because it was too much like real life.
Yes, exactly.
And that was one of the reasons I actually had a little difficulty with this book. Seriously, the thing that he is damning in it, they had to depict. Yep. And I found it really it was really upsetting me.
Yeah. Well, you're the most connected technologically of us.
Really?
Well, he's the most millennial of us.
You use the most social media of the three of us. You're wired 24/7 into Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. This is not news.
This is not news.
Whatever.
It's not untrue, but it's just that must hit you hard.
Maybe. Yeah. I wouldn't. I think there's. It doesn't matter. What's funny because the two of you are constantly like sending me links and stuff. I'm like, I don't know how you have time to read all this. So it's like the same. It's whatever is your constant input. The point is there's like all of this input going on all the time. And I was like, this is making me tired and I want to turn it off because I had just like stopped working like when I went to read it. And so while I liked the message and I very much helped to read the sort of afterword at the end to be like, okay, that's where they're going with this. At first I was like, there's so much, I couldn't grab onto anything. Which is what it was supposed to be. It's fine. But I found it like, it literally stressed me out. You know, with the combination of the art. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it worked. It's like, but whether you want that as an entertainment experience, I guess.
I would say the second issue looks very different. If they're changing locales, going from Los Angeles, which is the hub of all the stuff, to a place with no technology, it should be interesting to see how that works.
Clown torture.
Well, those clowns had it coming.
I'd like to watch them scream.
So Tokyo Ghost number one, new series. So check it out. If you didn't check it out, I enjoyed it. If anything, I mean, it's a great, you know, mix, two great creators doing some cool stuff. So it's definitely unlike anything else out there. So pick it up. But meanwhile, I didn't believe my eyes at the comic shop when I saw Captain America White number one.
I did a lot
10 years in the making.
I did a lot of 2008. So
less than zero came out.
7 years. Right.
Yeah. So, 7 years.
Eight
years.
Seven. No, you're right.
Seven.
I had to like check and I was like, is this a reprint? Is this a, what are we doing here? And then I was like, okay, no.
is this real? Is this
no, I just thought, I was like, am I just gonna read this thing that I read 7 years ago? Like, is that what I'm doing? Or did they put something together? And then once I was like, oh, it's a real thing, I was really very happy with it. I think this would have been my pick of the week.
Yeah, mine too. Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, returning to their color series. They did Daredevil Yellow, Spider-Man Blue, Hulk Gray, now Captain America White.
So now here's a question for you.
Yes.
That color series came out in the 2000s, right?
Early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
Yeah.
And safe to say a different world when it comes
world.
To comics. A very different landscape.
And that's why I like this so much.
There were no millennials then.
I was going to say, yeah, there were no millennials. I was going to say, does this matter as much as the older ones did when they came out 10 years ago?
Who gives a shit?
I'm just saying, it's a different world.
I don't think it
matters for what? In terms of how are you describing matter? I mean,
you know, and that team doing a type of book, and if you liked that type of book and they can still do it the same way, then play ball. I mean, they're going to do that on my favorite Marvel character.
Right.
I'm gonna get to see Tim Sale and Dave Stewart do World War II era Cap and Bucky.
What they do best.
Oh man, you know what? A long time ago you had made this point, Ron, of pointing out panels that had no black borders.
Yep.
And they show up later, but in the first part there's no black borders in these panels. And it's great. I was like, oh, that's I want to see more of that. Yeah. And I was noticing things like that, so I was appreciating that. And it felt a lot like, I don't know, it just felt good, and it was not hokey.
It brought me back to that time period when we first started iFanboy.
You know what it reminded me? You know what it felt like? It felt like New Frontier for Marvel.
And it was funny because as I'm reading this, this definitely feels the most cartoony that Tim Sale that I, more cartoony than I remember.
His style is definitely
I haven't seen him in such a long time that I honestly couldn't quite remember. I was like, is this what it always looked like? But there's a couple of things in here. You're not going to tell me that New Frontier didn't influence this. There's like bits where Bucky's jumping around in the background, looks just like Robin.
Yep.
Jumping around in the background in New Frontier. There's the bit in the my favorite sequence in the thing was in the plane and
yes.
Fury's like, nothing's gonna stop me from lighting my poof when it blows up. And then you have that that full page spread of them falling backwards through the tube. In the upper left foreground is Fury yelling, hit the silk. Like, that looks like a Darwin page.
Yeah, what about when in the beginning when they jump on the motorcycle, Captain America's on the motorcycle and Bucky's standing on the back
the
and you know, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like,
and
also the scale is very
it's great.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. It's
awesome.
The thing
that made me happiest was that this is a Marvel that I miss, this Marvel universe.
Absolutely.
This is a Captain America that I miss. This is a Steve Nick Fury I miss. This is Dum Dum Dugan that I miss.
So
this is
happy
a world
is
that I miss, and I love to be back just for 20 pages.
Like, weren't you like, oh, it's Nick Fury? It's actually him. Like, great. And and I really like the script. I like the tone. It's the thing about Jeff Loeb is that he will do stuff sometimes that I don't like a lot. But really, when he gets in there and he does his thing, like, he's got the stuff, and it's very specific. Right. Like, he's got, I think of James Robinson's another guy who's really specific. You know, like, there's a really cool voice there that he can do, and it's fun to see him when he's at his best, and which is impressive because this is a guy who's a TV executive most of the time now.
Yeah.
So this is the story of it opens with the famous scene where the Avengers discover Cap, and he wakes up and realizes that Bucky is dead. and he is sitting in a church when Fury, modern day Fury, you know, Nick Fury, gives him his Medal of Honor, gives him Bucky's Medal of Honor, and so then we have a flashback to when Cap and Bucky first met Nick Fury in the Howling Avengers, but also when Bucky first, actually no, that's the second part. It's basically when Nick Fury and Howling Avengers first have their first adventure with Cap and Bucky, and then we get a reprint of issue zero, which did come out 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Which features the origin of Bucky, which was also really fantastic. And that's where you can see the difference in the art, actually, between the two.
And I was going to say, actually, I like the new art better.
Interesting.
I do. It had a really sort of very rough quality to it.
It's not completely different. It's very similar, but there's a slightly more cartoony than new stuff.
Yeah, it's a little more line-based, where there's sort of like a bunch of pencil shading and stuff in the older bits. I'm wondering if the new one's digital.
I don't know.
I don't think so, because I could see.
They can make brushstrokes and stuff.
Yeah, I was gonna say you definitely see brushstrokes in the new stuff.
But in the old one, you see there's a page.
But is that just Dave Stewart coloring black and white brushstrokes?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think Tim Sale works digitally.
I wouldn't be surprised if anybody's working. You know, I'm not surprised about anybody working digitally at this point.
Yeah, I guess not.
I don't know.
This is a great old school Marvel comic, though. If you are a fan of that,
in the middle of sort of everything else that's going on, whatever all those new costumes are or anything, to just be like get into some sort of, for us, totally like roots Marvel. You know, like this is like, because in our sort of period of really getting into iFanboy and starting this and everything, these were sort of seminal books and event books when they came out of the time. And so it's a nice little throwback to.
And we were psyched when they announced this. 7 years ago. Yeah. We were ready for it. Was it New York Comic Con?
Andy Diggle, not so much.
And then never happened.
No,
it finally did. So there you go. Good things come to those who wait.
Indeed.
Now, Josh, I feel like every time the Fade Out comes out, I say the same thing, but I think this might have been my favorite issue of Fade Out. Fade Out number 9. This is the first issue of the third arc of this story. And here we get a lot of answers. We get the backstory on Charlie and Gil and their friendship and why it's so fractured and messed up, and it is for a very good reason.
It's a very specific frame, and I thought, is that what's happening there?
Oh. and then we find out a little bit about
the other room, guys.
Yeah, they could have just slid 20 feet to any direction.
She likes it that way.
And then we get a big old clue onto what's going on in this really fucked up golden age of Hollywood. And the thing is, it's awful. It's really horrible what they uncover and what the studio is trying to cover up, which is probably why the murder happened that touched up this whole thing.
It's like the end of Chinatown. You're just like, oh, that's awful.
But within all the awfulness, this continues to be just such a wonderful comic, and I can't get enough of it. I really can't. And this was a really great issue. And what's interesting is Brubaker and Phillips, Brubaker talks about in the back how people have mentioned how there's certain issues of this book that are good jumping on points, and he's like, there is no good jumping on point other than issue one. This is a novel, and if you just picked up this issue and read it, you might see a really well crafted comic, but you wouldn't have any emotional resonance as to what's happening here.
Yeah. I want to give a shout out to Betty Breitweiser.
Mm-hmm.
The colors going on in this thing are nuts. That sort of coloring that's coming through the blinds, that sort of purple and blue sort of palette, it's really great. And the sort of sickly green of the flashback of having sex with your best friend's wife.
In front of him.
What? No, I know.
What? I actually really enjoyed their story.
I did too.
Seeing Gil came to Hollywood as a hot writer in the 30s, a novelist, and his first job is to rewrite F. Scott Fitzgerald's screenplay, and it just goes downhill from there. It's just... he gets chewed up by the Hollywood machine, and then it takes this new kid, Gil, comes in, who sort of lights his fire again. They become writing partners. Gil gets the Oscar nomination, and then
screwed.
Downhill from there. The war happens. Gil comes back with shell shock, sleeps with his friend's wife, and she's just trying to get his shell shock gone. That's all she was trying to do.
It's a mercy fuck.
It's public service. He's a veteran.
He's a veteran. It's not wrong if he's a veteran.
It's not.
I was in the war, you know. Oh. Oh. You want to go get a drink? It's fine.
And the really awful thing is that you know that a lot of this really awful stuff happened in the Golden Age, and probably still happens somewhere in Hollywood.
But, it's a miracle machine. We make fantasy.
So the big reveal here is that Gil had been following the studio head and his security boss around town and blackmailed them falsely to draw them out, and he drew them out, and they were burning these photographs, and he managed to get his hands on some, and it includes the old studio people having sex with the little rascals, the version of the little rascals in this world. So it's awful.
Yep.
But good comic.
Awful, but good.
Yeah. Well, that's something.
It describes a lot of Brubaker's crime stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
Going all the way back to the that scene of the crime book.
Yeah, oh, jeez.
So, anyway. Hawkeye number 5, or the Ingroning. It was so ingroniating.
You still read this?
I can't not at this point. And I hate it more each time. Notice at first, I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's interesting. At this point, I was just like, oh, this is, oh.
So now we have an answer when people ask you, what do you guys read that you continue to read but you hate? And Josh always goes, nothing. I don't read anything I hate. But now we know it's Hawkeye.
Yeah, I wanted to turn around. I like these people. I like the characters. I like the creators. God, by the end of this one, though, I just, ugh.
This is still Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez?
Yeah. So they've
got
these.
So bad about it?
There's a bunch of things. They've got. Did you read any of it, Connor?
No.
Okay. So they've.
I did. I read it.
Yeah, I know you did.
Mine counts too.
I care.
I know. You're going to make comment. You're there for me. I know. So,
okay. All right. I'm here.
So the basic of this. There's two things going on. There's a flashback of the story, which is Clinton Barney back with the swordsman in the circus, and we find out where it all began. Blah blah blah. And then the current day story is Clinton and Kate. They broke into a SHIELD facility, I think, and they found these kids who were horribly disfigured, and they'd been experimented on, and basically they're like the kid from the Twilight Zone. They're Bill Mumy. Like they think you're bad, and they can just dissolve everything around them. So we open this issue, and they've dissolved a bunch of – are those Hydra agents?
Those are Hydra agents, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So – and then Clint's like, this is horrible. We can't keep doing this. We should have never done this. And then Kate's all self-righteous, and she's like, what are you talking about? They're monsters. And then and he's like, they're going to keep chasing us forever. And she's like, we should go to the Avengers. And he's like, no. I don't know why. And so they let a bunch of other Hydra agents come in and take the kids away.
And I'm like, which I thought was odd.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that was weird.
And maybe this is part of the story?
Maybe.
It seemed super. I don't think so, though, because I don't feel like he'd be pulling a thing on her, but I don't know. Maybe, and I reserve that this could be like a Han Solo's wife, like that kind of thing, like a bit of a swerve.
Yeah.
But it seemed like that's what was going on, because then we flash forward to old Clint, who, of course, has a
old
beard.
Old man Clint?
Of course, has a beard and a fucking ponytail, exactly like Oliver Queen. Exactly like Oliver fucking Queen, and his sad pizza dog is sitting there next to him, and he tries to give the dog the pizza, and the dog doesn't want it. Oh, he's rejecting Clint via pizza, and then old Kate shows up, and she's like, "We made a mistake. We have to get them back." And I just was like, "Ugh,
dude, it's very lost. We have to go back. We made a mistake."
It's just just everything. It was like. Everything that didn't make me groan was hackneyed, which also made me groan. I really...
You know what I think is so funny, though?
Am I wrong about this? Like, did I read this wrong?
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I groan, too. But this is Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez, two creators that I would go as far to say that you like.
I like them a lot, and that's why this is hard.
Yeah.
I've never felt right about this book. I feel like they should have just ended it when Matt Fraction and David Aja walked away.
They should have ended it, and it should have gone away for a couple of months, and then come back and do your own thing. But
do a new, completely new direction, new take on the character. Yeah,
but the problem is that the book was selling, and why would you know? Don't
no, I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's such a hard thing to try to exist within that very specific thing that they set up, and what we're doing here.
Yeah,
and it feels like it, but it doesn't. Like the flashbacks are kind of cool. They're more interesting because
right.
I like the story that they're telling. Also, just we ignored the fact that Hawkeye was deaf for decades.
Right.
And I think we should have left that in the box.
Yep.
I really don't like it. And I know maybe it's like we're showing this amazingly beautiful blonde Aryan man and we're saying, well, no, but he's deaf. like that's his diversity. But it just feels super like we need a thing to talk about. Right. We're going to talk about this thing, and it doesn't add anything.
Right.
It doesn't give me. And I don't like the reasoning. I don't. He got hit so hard by his dad that he went deaf. Like, I just said it out loud, and it made you laugh.
No, exactly.
Because like it's taking the metaphor and making it real.
Yeah.
Like the your dad beating you can fuck you up enough mentally that you don't need to also be deaf.
Yeah.
But it's worse.
Yes, it is. But we have, yeah.
Well, Daredevil's blind.
Oh, man.
And it he's makes, also, yeah. Oh, just.
It's okay. It's okay, Josh. You don't have to like
he
it.
He didn't
okay.
want the pizza. Yeah. Fuck that dog.
Listen, you can reject somebody emotionally and not reject delicious pizza.
Yeah.
I've
yeah.
been there.
Unless it was from Papa John's.
Also, dogs.
And by all means.
Dogs who like pizza it. Are going to eat that pizza.
That's for sure. I mean, once they, you know, that's the thing. Once they get a taste for pizza, there's no going back.
I you know, I have a dog.
It's like a shark with a taste for human
exactly.
blood.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's nothing. My dog could be in a bad mood or whatever. Like if you were like, here's a piece of popcorn, he'd be like, fucking love popcorn. It's all he's thinking about. There's no.
Yep.
And he looks exactly like Oliver Queen from Dark. Come on.
Shouldn't the dog be dead at that point?
Yes. This looks 30 years later. The pizza dog is 50. I don't do this often. I hate giving bad reviews, especially from creators that I like.
Yeah.
But the only thing I think is this is all a big feint. And at the end, I'm going to feel stupid and I'm totally prepared. I'm ready for that. So that's fine.
And you're going to see it through.
Of course, I can't not at this point. I don't know. There must have been a Batman run somewhere that you were like, I just going to keep reading it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I was locked in for life at that point,
yeah,
Josh.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
That was a lifetime commitment.
I remember the Orca.
That was the one I'm thinking of exactly. That's the one I think of whenever someone says, wasn't there better than Batman? Orca. Orca, Orca, Orca.
The whale lady.
The whale lady one. Terrible.
Who did that?
Went on forever. Larry Hama?
Oh, yeah. God. Scott McDaniel, was it?
One of the all-time great writers?
Yeah. No, that's the other thing. Like, that's when they... What's happening here? Why is this? Why is this? Yeah, so there was that. I haven't done that in a while.
Josh is going to stew on that for a while. I'm going to talk to you people.
Move on, because I keep going.
We know you're trying to save money in your favorite comic books, so we have found the perfect store to help you do that. Bald Eagle Comics is an online comic shop where everything's marked down 20%. In addition to the outstanding discounts, they also have weekly deals, which can help you save up to 70% on all your favorites. And the savings don't just apply to back issues. You get the same deals on Marvel and DC new releases as they come out every week. I know that you're thinking, with these kind of discounts, they must charge a lot for shipping. That's how they make up their margins, Ron. But no. Shipping is just $3 for the entire order. And if you spend $50 or more, shipping is free for you get 2-day free shipping. As collectors, you want your comics to arrive safely, which is why every comic from Bald Eagle Comics comes from with a free bag and board, and they're shipped in a special bend-proof package. And the good folks at Bald Eagle Comics are doing a special deal just for listeners of our show. You can get all their comics in their store for half price. That's 50% off. Just use coupon code IFANBOY with all capital letters. That's 50% off all comics with the coupon code IFANBOY. Just visit www.baldeaglecomics.com to order your comics today. 50% off.
Okay, listen to that. Take advantage of that.
Especially
exactly.
considering all the $4.99 books, that's a lot of money.
Because there's two things you're going to do there. You're going to show this wonderful supporter and advertiser that you're listening to the ads and you're taking action on a good. And then you're getting 50% off of your comics. That's amazing. I'm not shilling right now. I'm literally like, that's great. You should totally. Yeah. Do that.
It can't hurt to try.
No,
is what I'm saying. Try it once. See how it goes.
And we thank them for their support.
Thank you, Bald Eagle Comics, for your support. Check them out.
All right.
It's a very good deal.
Sounds wicked American.
Here we go.
All right. So it seems
like we didn't talk about Star Wars enough last week.
Listen, I just got to say, I'm getting a little bit of the fever. I'm getting a little bit of the Star Wars fever. So this week saw Star Wars number 9 and Lando number 4. And essentially, I'm just looking for any reason for Jason Aaron to call me to yell at me because he yelled. Because after last time he got mad at me. But in Star Wars number 9, TIE fighters land on the surface.
They do that. That happens.
That was weird. That was weird.
It's weird, right? It's weird. So I did some research.
I was like, oh, he's flying right in. Oh, no, he's walking out. Okay. Go ahead.
That happens. So, it happens.
So originally, TIE fighters could not land. The wings are not sturdy enough, and if you remember correctly, they would hang in the hangar, like attached by the sides and a little thing. They were always space bound, basically. And I did some research online and found many message boards of people arguing over whether or not TIE fighters can land or not.
I thought that was like a, and this is probably just legends now, but yeah. I thought that like they weren't able to land on purpose.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly.
So that they wouldn't escape. They could just fight or go back to the docking, where Death Star or Star Destroyer or whatever it was.
I remember that as well. I don't know what the source of that was, but yeah, it was done by design to keep the pilots, you know, kind of focused and all they could do. You know.
I guarantee you, nobody at Lucasfilm thought of that. But I love
it. And also, they have no atmosphere in the ship. That's why they're wearing the helmet with the tubes and everything. So like, you can't live in that ship.
Right.
But here's the thing: in the trailer for Force Awakens, you see them on their wings, in the ship.
That's new. I don't care. They might have changed that. I'm talking about the old stuff here. Come on.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
what is the Force Awakens? Can we? Jesus,
well,
Jim.
Anyway, so according to Wikipedia, in the canon section. All right. The original TIE fighters were designed not to be able to land at all. And then as part of a 5-year plan for the industrialization of the Outer Rim territories, TIE fighters were built with sturdier wings, which allowed them to land on the surface.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, which is a feature not included in the standard TIE. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether this 5-year plan is before this comic takes place or not, but I just have issue with TIE fighters landing. Other than that,
comic takes place right after episode 4.
Right after Star Wars. Yeah, exactly.
So the
exactly.
5-year – okay.
Yeah. Right. The question is when that 5-year plan started. That's I need to see what the footnote on that is. But neither here nor there, because I love this comic. Oh, yeah. This is, by the way, the 5-year plan was during Star Wars Rebels, which takes place before A New Hope.
Okay.
So it's viable. It's viable. Works. Okay. Jason
Aaron. Out.
Jason Aaron, I will allow it. I will allow it.
All right.
But that said, Stuart. I am in love with Stuart Immonen drawing these characters.
Stuart Immonen.
It's so good.
Stuart Immonen. That's my review.
Yeah.
Stuart Immonen.
Stuart Immonen drawing a very concerned Mon Mothma.
She gave him up.
And like the thing is that like I read this comic, I read Mon Mothma's lines as the woman who said it in Jedi, when she says, "Please forgive me, Skywalker." Where it's like, "This is the many Bothans died." It's the same tone. It's the
so what is the story going on here?
I don't know.
There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff happening in this issue.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
There's
going
a hut with mechanical legs and a Hulk body,
like Mojo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what you got is you got kind of A and B plot going on. You got Han and Leia are together, and Han's wife has sold them out to the Empire, and the Empire is now trying to capture them, and they narrowly escape with some good hijinks, some good Han, like, give me my gun, like that kind of arguing, that sort of thing.
So that was a fake wife, real wife?
Well, we don't know yet. She's still referring to him she's like, come on, hubby.
The tone changed a lot in this one from the last issue, though, where we're now like, I forget what the moment was, but now they're all fighting against the Empire together. Basically, like, he was like, "I'm a rebel," and she's like,
She didn't know he was a rebel, and so that's why she was okay. She was okay with selling out Princess Leia, but she didn't realize that he joined the rebellion. But then Han explains that and says, "Help us escape." So they jump in the wife's ship, which is like a modified. It's like a Millennium Falcon if the cockpit was in the middle. It's kind of weird, but so she's flying the ship. And the highlight of the issue is when Han says, "You know, I really think I should be the pilot." And then they both Leia and his wife at the same time interrupt him with a shut up, which I thought it was very had comedy, had what you expected.
Well, he should be the pilot. He's a good pilot.
I know, yeah. But then you also have on the same side, you had the B plot is Luke went out to Nar Shadda by himself because he's trying to get passage to Coruscant because he wants to go to the Jedi Temple. Like, he's trying to figure out what the Jedis are and all that sort of stuff. And in a very cool twist, he encounters this Hutt who collects Jedi memorabilia and has a Jedi holocron and makes Luke kind of activate it, and that was kind of cool. The Hutt says, you know, "You're the last of the Jedi, and now you're mine. You're part of my collection." And so that required Mon Mothma and General Dodonna and Admiral Ackbar to say, "What should we go help Luke?" And they say no, but then Chewie says, "I'll go." So now Chewie's going to go help Luke. So
Here's my request.
Yeah.
Every other issue, not every issue, I'm not being unreasonable. Every other issue, I need one page of Dodonna, Mon Mothma, and Akbar working this shit behind the scenes.
Yeah. I agree.
That's the Dodonna moment I've been waiting for.
I want to know why Dodonna faded away. Like, where did Dodonna go after A New Hope? That's what I hope. That's what I want Jason Aaron to answer in this series.
That actor died. So let us go over
to Lando.
To Lando Land.
Lando system.
Lando Land.
Lando Land.
That
Lando
is a system. Line in the book.
It is a line in the book.
Lando Oof. Land.
Lando Oof. Land. Are you with me now that Charles Soule is not the writer for Lando?
I don't know. I'm back and forth. Other than that, that was one that I was like, I think it's interesting. I'm not 100% sold, but you know, I don't know. I don't know about this book.
It's tough.
There's things I like about it. There are definitely things I like about it. I think the tone, if not the words, seem to be just about right for Lando. And you know, we don't really have a lot. We don't know a ton about him. I don't think he's got all that much background.
Yeah, I think he's got the swagger down. It's just it's just Lando Land. I mean,
I didn't like that. There's like always like a line or two. I'm like, that's weird for me.
There's always one thing that makes you go, that said, I loved everything else. I didn't love it, but you know, I liked everything else. Yeah, I like the Ugnaught. I like these cat people.
I didn't know that Ugnaught was a lady.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like the cat people, but I like everything about them except for the fact that they're cats.
Right.
What's going on with Lobot?
Lobot's still in the Bacta tank.
He's in the Bacta. He's F. They keep saying, listen, we do this and that his implants are going to take over his mind. They keep saying it. It's Chekhov's gun, but it's like Lobot's mind.
Yeah.
So that takes care of all that. That's our version where I was just talking about Hawkeye. I'm like, I'm hoping this is a thing that makes me have overreacted.
Right.
It's still going to call him Low, though.
We're going to find out. I mean, my guess is that he comes out affected and no longer is as casual as he was. And that's,
I am no longer low. I am.
But I have no idea when this ends. I mean, the next issue, there's a tease for the next issue. So,
do you think there's any chance that you could get a variant of this where all of the Lando pictures are replaced by the ladies' man?
Maybe. No.
Because I think all the dialogue continues to work. Well, hey, hey, hey. There's a lady. The person chasing him, it turns out to be a beautiful, sexy lady.
Yep.
and she sees that it's Lando, and she's like, oh, I will stop working right now for the Emperor. I will be with you, Lando. Because he's got that kind of charm.
Alex McCrindle played Jand O'Donna, and Alex McCrindle lived until 1990.
He just didn't get the call for Empire.
He got on the phone with Alec Guinness, and he was like, can you believe this shit? And Alex was like, I know, I didn't like it either. And they just went back and forth.
Was Alec Guinness in
the Beatles? Yeah,
he was a Beatle. He's the fifth Beatle.
I was like, back it up. Too late, it came out. Shit.
All right, well, let's move on. Connor, Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn number 20, I wanted to mention briefly, because in this issue, Harley Quinn is on the case of a missing persons, which takes her out to Hollywood, which allows Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Conner to work through some of their Hollywood issues, or their L.A. issues, really.
Why am I not surprised that they have L.A. issues?
So worth mentioning this because on her cross-country flight, Harley is having a she's asleep and having a dream where she's a stewardess on a plane full of superheroes, but also Jonah Hex. So you get a little bit of Jimmy Palmiotti and Jonah Hex action again.
Ooh.
He's got a lot of little bottles of whiskey from that flight on his tray table. Mm-hmm. Yep. There's a good scene. Real quick. There's a scene where she goes to Hollywood Boulevard, where they, you know, it's full of Hollywood and Vine is where all the people in costumes are. And there's a Harley Quinn from the animated series, and she's like, "What are you wearing?" And so there's a little bit of fourth wall breaking in that. So because she's not like that anymore.
Right.
There you go. It was fun. I actually like this. I talked about it before. How 1 month I'll like it, 1 month I'll get tired of it, then another month I'll like it. I liked this one.
I totally related to that thing where, like, this is a really cool idea. And then around issue 12, 16, you're like, all right, you know, there can be too much of a good thing. Prez number 4.
There's a lot going on in this book.
This book.
Well, they got only two more issues, so they got to cram it.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, you're going to have to make your point soon there, Prez.
Yeah. We're three quarters done, and there's still a lot of story.
Yep. But there's a lot going on, both humorously, seriously, dramatically, and I'm just amazed at how much they're packing into each issue and how it's working. It's working.
It is excellent satire.
Yeah, excellent satire. Yeah. Yep.
So yeah, and it's funny because it really does work. It's very much a bit of a counterpoint to our pick of the week this week. You know, just kind of doing the same thing but with a completely different tone.
Yep. It's great, and it's a shame that predictably, we called it as soon as we could.
I really like the structure of the way that this thing at the end was revealed, though.
Yeah,
I really like. Basically, they do the idea that every time we have a war, we call it like a great victory, but there's always some unintended consequence. World War One created Hitler. World War Two created the Cold War. Like all these things, and then we see that happen over the course of this issue. These are just really, really well crafted comics. I gotta give it to them.
Yeah. Cool. So to continue with the 50th anniversary of S.H.I.E.L.D., we got an Agent Carter #1 one shot by Catherine Immonen, who wrote it. And I really wonder how many people pick this up and go, "Why does Agent Carter have blonde hair?" So as we continue to try to confuse everybody between the comics and the TV show, but. Other than that, it was fun. I mean, I'm enjoying these Shields book, but there was no Steranko or Kirby art, unfortunately.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, but a pretty sweet Declan Shalvey cover. So there you go.
I wanted to mention,
and on the cover, she is in one color. Like they don't show that she has blonde hair on the cover. Right. Which is very funny. So
black and white ish.
Yep.
She's wearing. They should have had her wear a wig at some point.
Yeah.
Black Canary #4. I wanted to mention because Pia Guerra drew it.
Ooh. Really?
The Last Man, yes.
Interesting.
So you didn't read this, Ron? You were enjoying Black Folk.
I did, yeah. I missed it.
I did read it, but I didn't realize that.
Yes, Pia Guerra.
Because I feel like I just hopped on at issue 2 or something like that, and I don't entirely know what's going on. So
I don't entirely know what's going on either. But I like the art, and Pia Guerra was doing – I mean, it's her, but it's also a little bit more stylized to fit in with the book.
Yeah, it is. That I think that's why I didn't notice it. It definitely felt, I was like, this. Now that you're saying it like after the fact, it's like it did feel familiar. And now I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, it's totally Pia Guerra. That's neat. I like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
So other than the story, I don't know what's really going on, but the art was really great.
Was this canceled? I feel like this doesn't exist.
Not yet.
Okay.
I also, I'm liking all of these DC variant covers that are taking place squarely in the New 52 world.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. All right. Well, Josh, how can the folks help us out?
Well, it's easy, Ron. They can go to ifanboy.com/support. There's a couple of things you can do there. First and foremost, nice and easy, you can go to our Amazon link there, and anything that you buy from super mega retailer giant Amazon.com, we get a little piece of. Cost you nothing. All it does is benefit us. That's all it does. No, you'll get your stuff too. I order stuff. I need some stuff. I don't want to leave. I want them to bring it to me. I'm not saying I want a drone.
Sometimes a package will come to Josh.
And he might not know for days.
He won't know about it for days.
I wasn't expecting. If I'm expecting a package, I will go outside and look for it. If I'm not.
Sometimes his friends will buy him something as a surprise and we'll hear nothing about it for days. Even after it's been delivered.
Maybe sometimes someone should say, "Hey, look outside," because you did. And then I was like, okay. And then I was like, cool. I'm glad I looked outside. I went out to check the mail at a certain point. I didn't see it.
And now I see why you had such stress reading Tokyo Ghost. Continue.
Anyway, so you can do that, and we greatly appreciate it, and thank everyone who does that. You could also contribute directly. You can have an iFanboy membership for either $3 a month, $30 a year, or any amount of your choosing at one time. It's up to you. If you want to contribute directly to iFanboy to say, "Hey, I appreciate what you guys have been doing for a decade. The show is important to me. I want to show a little token of my appreciation. I want you to know that I materially support you and wish you to stick around," then you can do that. And we thank everybody who does either of those things. We very much appreciate it. And you make the world a better place because you're taking part in this new amazing economy and keeping our show going.
Yeah. We really blabbed on that first segment, or the first two segments with
we
comics
really did.
Going along.
Star Wars came up.
Those are the comics we wanted to talk about. If you want to go to iFanboy.com, you can find a post for the show and talk about other books or those books, whatever books you want. We'll do some audience questions. I don't know how many we'll get to. Where are we in time? Okay.
Do you wanna start with RJ from New York?
We'll do. Well, I suppose since you've said his name, so RJ, forcing our hand.
RJ from New York says, in a recent episode, Connor and Ron were discussing DC's creative malaise, and the words regime change popped up. I don't recall saying that.
I definitely didn't say that.
I'm not named.
I was wondering, are there any names in the industry that have given an editorial/executive position would get you excited? And this is the classic, well, who should replace Dan DiDio then? And I find that fascinating. I thought this question was interesting because we've seen
picking these questions, Ron, that will get us in trouble.
With who? We don't care. We're off the reservation.
No, I'm just saying.
Go ahead. I have something to say later.
I mean, the thing is that like dating back to, because the thing is, when I started reading comics, Tom DeFalco was the editor in chief of Marvel, and I don't even know who was editor in chief of DC. Who was the editor in chief in the 90s, Connor?
Paul Levitz.
Oh, it was Paul Levitz. Yeah, he was the publisher. Yeah, he was the head of it, whatever. Yeah, and then it wasn't until Joe Quesada became editor-in-chief I was like, oh, somebody actually know, like a creator can be the editor, you know? Like,
well, that's not entirely true. Roy Thomas.
No, I didn't know, though. Okay. I was a dumb kid. I didn't know about Roy Thomas.
What he knew.
Yeah.
Okay.
I went back and I understood and all stuff like that. So I don't know. But the question is that do we think that any – does a good creator necessarily make a good editor-in-chief?
Oh. Like, no.
Yeah, see? Oh. There you go.
No, and that's the thing.
No, that depends on the person.
No one in the world could have predicted that. And I'm going to add Jimmy Palmiotti into this too. That Palmiotti
always gets overlooked in that.
Yeah, that Palmiotti and Quesada would sort of create a system that would then take Marvel from literally nothing. Like they were bankrupt. I remember. Yeah. Do you remember the conversations we had? Like we should buy that Marvel stock. It's 15 cents a share.
I remember. Yeah.
Bunch of fucking idiots. Yep. But at the time, who would have thought? You know, like there's no way. And so, you know, Palmiotti was an inker.
Right.
Quesada was a penciler, not a huge name. You know, like a guy that was pretty good.
They were good solid names back then.
Yeah. And they'd created Ash. They'd done one sort of creator-owned series. And I think no one would have seen that coming. No one would have suspected that. Carmine Infantino, you know, he ran DC for a really long time. You know, he was a pretty good artist, but it wasn't like.
Whoa!
No, that's not my point. I'm saying he wasn't like a superstar that someone was like, you know,
yes, it was.
That guy should run everything. Is my point. I don't think that was a thing. So like,
but
right
you never
now,
know. I mean, Dick Giordano was an inker. He ran DC. I mean, Roy Thomas was a writer. I mean, but it doesn't necessarily mean they'll be good at it. I would tend to think. Hey, I want Mark Waid to run
right.
DC, okay. But he didn't really do a good job running Boom, at least
well,
according
to that was gonna be my point. Yeah. So the thing is you can pick point. Out somebody who's your favorite creator, and that doesn't mean they're gonna be good at running the whole line. You know,
let's not forget Jim Shooter.
Jeff Johns.
Yep.
Jeff Johns, not that he's doing anything wrong, but you know, like
he's not the publisher though.
CCO. They put him in a creative and I liked his work a lot more when he was just doing the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rather than trying to run the line from a creative standpoint, which is, I don't even think that's a thing that's happening anymore. But I don't think that those two things necessarily correlate at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's, I mean, it's funny how the editor-in-chief of Marvel is equated to the publishers at DC, but the publisher at Marvel is, you know, Dan Buckley, the publisher at Marvel, is a business guy. He's not a creative guy, you know.
He still meddles in the creative, though.
So is Bill Jemis, too. So, you know. Yeah. Let's
Fine,
not forget dude. that
Alan Fine.
Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief at DC, a name we do not hear.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
You never hear it.
Yeah, which is a weird choice because he was the editor-in-chief at Marvel during a period that not great.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the one that ran it in the crowd. I mean, I'm not saying it was his fault, but he was at the helm when they went bankrupt. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's or at least during that time. So, you know, he was the one that Joe Quesada took it over from to bring it back up.
Yeah. Although it can be argued that whatever. Now we're getting into all that sort of stuff.
No, there's a whole lot to it.
Yeah. I don't want to use the word patsy, but yeah.
This is why I don't like these questions. I don't know anything.
The thing is, like, it's really hard to be like, you know, Alan Moore is a very good comic book writer. He should be in charge of the company. And that's not his skill set necessarily.
Right.
That's the point I'm getting at. So I don't know who would make a good editor-in-chief.
And a lot of times there are people in editor-in-chief publishery positions who are there, you know, and because they navigated the right way, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're the right person. You know, like I think it's a very unique kind of role, and it requires somebody who's got creative and business mindset and too much of an imbalance. I mean, like part of the problems we see at DC is you know, right now is everyone's, you know, kind of up in arms because they're reacting to low sales, and that's a business problem. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're looking for creative to provide solutions. I mean, it's very difficult. That's what I'm trying to say.
I also think that I think there are a lot of editors out there who are very good, but we don't know it because if they're doing their job, you have no idea to know it. But like, take a guy like well, he moved over, but like Steve Wacker, I think he was a good editor. Yeah. People seemed to really like working with him. He put out a lot of good books. Nick Lowe, you know, he's the X-Men guy. But when he does like a sort of side project, like he knows how to put together great things, not huge selling things necessarily, but you know, like he was behind like Fury Max and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of really good editors that I think people don't know about.
Right. Well, those are very behind the scene kind of role, you know.
Yeah, but like I think guys like those would probably be, you know, there's probably a lot of guys like that who would be pretty, really good in the big chair, but it doesn't necessarily make a big story.
Yeah.
That's what Axel Alonso was.
Yeah.
DC's big problem from my perspective, and I don't know, it could not be. I don't work there, but from the outside it looks from the stories we hear is that the power structure is all screwy. There's two co-publishers, there's an editor in chief. There's a chief creative officer. There's all kinds of other people we don't know about, and that kind of thing can lead to fiefdoms.
Yeah,
which lead to problems. So it's not so much a matter of just swapping out the Dan Didio. I mean, first of all, he's just one of the two co-publishers. It's the whole structure needs to.
And no one wants to blame Jim Lee.
The whole thing wants. Well, yeah, I think. Yeah, well, anyway.
No one blames the superstar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, one last quick email. Connor, you want to read it for
John?
Josh?
From Plainville, Illinois. John says, I'm a senior in college.
Don't say it. Just go past it. Move on.
Can't. I'm a senior in college I'm a senior in college and just got into comics a little over a year ago. Ever since then, I've just been reading as much as I can, trying to build up my knowledge.
Take English classes.
Which has also meant a lot of Googling to try to grasp characters and past events. One thing that I can't really figure out is where to start with Jack Kirby. I know his legacy and have read about him, but not any of his work. What collected editions would you recommend as far as essential or best Kirby available?
Josh?
I think we're all going to say you should read the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
152?
Well, first of all, I think it's commendable that John, as a whippersnapper, I'm a bastard millennial, wants to learn about
earlier than them. He's whatever is after millennial. He might be that.
Wants to learn about Kirby, but also it's going to be tough because, you know, Kirby is old school, and a lot of modern readers have problems with old school stories and art. Because if Kirby started drawing a book now, he had never been around, and just started, everyone would hate it.
Well, yeah. But he invented the thing, so it seemed like he
was also. Right, but what I mean is, it's hard sometimes for people who are new to the medium to understand why Kirby's so good. If they just see his art, they may not like it. You didn't like it at first.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the key to being able to appreciate it is to understand the context in which it exists. So for that, like, I almost think if you sort of read the history and you get a context for all those things, because if you just jump into like, you know, let's get this one thing, it might be hard. I have a omnibus of Captain America. From when he returned to it in the 70s.
Yes, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Great looking, but it's weird, and it's not necessarily like I'm reading this and going, "Well, this is an amazing writing." It's not.
That's the thing is like what I was gonna say is like after Fantastic Four, which I absolutely agree, but then Commandy all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Commandy is which he wrote and drew.
What about the New Gods?
That was gonna be the other thing I was gonna say.
Yeah, well, I think personally Commandy is the best thing that he wrote. You know, I think it's all alone. It's set in the way, you know, it's in a different time, and it's, you know, like, and it's crazy and it's different and it's, you know, whatever. But I just think it's wonderful. The New Gods stuff is really good too. But yeah. So.
But it's also weird. Like
it's the '70s.
Like, people are very split on the writing. Like, some of his sentences don't make any sense, you know, but from a sort of overall world-building standpoint, it's hard to beat.
Yeah. Listen, he was a weird guy.
He was.
Yeah, which is great.
He was a weird guy. I think the context to understanding it is absolutely crucial. Unless you just get it, and that's great for you, but for me, I definitely needed that.
It's hard. People have to really understand what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
But right. Good on you. This is what you should. This is what you should be doing in college. This is exactly what college is for.
Exactly.
And so, threesomes.
So damn it. Take notes, John from Illinois. Threesomes and Kirby. All right. So if you have a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call and leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. And be sure to tell us who you are, where you're from, and keep it brief. We're getting lots of very long emails, and we can't sit there and read a book. It's bad radio. It's bad podcasting. So keep your emails brief like John and RJ did, and keep your voicemails down to 30 seconds, and that's how you can get in on the action. Speaking of getting in on the action, a lot of you wrote in for episode 501, right, Connor?
Yes. I don't know why this is on here, but 501 is still...
It's a reminder, a little reminder.
It's a reminder.
Watch the video. Go watch the video.
Yeah.
That's I saw something else in the script that threw me completely off. So two things. One, the video is up on our YouTube page and our website. So if you missed the live stream of episode 501 in which Josh got drunk and almost fell out of his chair... You can watch that on youtube.com/ifanboy and also on the one of the embedded posts on ifanboy.com. But just go to the YouTube page. It's right there.
That was on.
And also, if you sent in an email and we didn't get to it on the show, we are making our way through them on this show itself. So hopefully you'll hear your email answered eventually. So thank you for everyone who participated in that. Really fun night.
And I assume the thing that gave you pause is this next thing. Should I still do it? All right. So you like this podcast. I assume you like the three of us. You're going to want to stay tuned to the iFanboy Twitter feed on this Monday, so tomorrow, as we've got a very exciting announcement.
Or today, depending on when you're listening.
Or today. I mean, yeah. So this podcast comes out on Sunday the 20th. Let's just say on Monday the 21st, stay tuned to the world of iFanboy. We hope some of you will be excited.
Something you never heard of.
Yeah. So,
you okay?
That's
You all right?
Appropriately vague.
Appropriately vague, and we'll talk more about it next week after all of your minds are blown.
You said you said you was all right.
Yeah.
you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can talk about the books from the week that we have talked about. You can tell me how much you love Hawkeye or how much you like the new Lobot. You can find all of our other podcasts. You can find all the things that we've done. You can follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy. You can follow us at ifanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
If you like the show, write a review on iTunes. I mean, don't review the last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's an anomaly. Keep in mind the previous hour and forget the last 5 minutes and then write a review on iTunes. Tell people what you thought of the show. You know, good, bad, ugly. We accept all reviews. They all keep us honest. So if you that's how you can help us, and that's how you can help any podcast you listen to. If you write them a review on iTunes, it really helps people find them. Better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to the podcast, your comic store, your bookie. Sometimes a bookie needs a podcast to listen to as he drives around picking up his bets.
Your wig guy.
Yeah. If you have a wig guy.
Yeah. So. All right.
Help us spread the idea by love.
I got him. So, all right. So that wraps up for this week's show. As always, thank you for listening. Go shop at Bald Eagle Comics and go to Amazon and do all the fun stuff. We thank everybody. We love you all. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Everything I want to be original.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.